This is the Photography Podcast on photography.ca, episode number 33, Basics, Studio Lighting. Thanks, Amira. Hey there, photo lovers, and how's it going? And welcome to the 33rd Photography Podcast on photography.ca. My name is Marco, and as always, we are coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. For today's show, if I can get through my sniffles, we are going to talk about setting up a portrait studio for beginners. So this is actually a monster topic. I'm going to try and focus on some areas that I think are going to be useful for a lot of people. And then, of course, if I've missed something, people can just email me or contact me and I'll add it to a new section. In fact, lighting and photography is such a monster topic that I'm going to be doing bunches of episodes on lighting, either in the near future or further down the road. And hopefully we could all learn a thing or two. But before we get into any content, as always, I'd like to thank those people that left comments, and Al in particular found our last podcast on multiple exposure very useful. He particularly liked the tip on playing with the film speed to gauge different amounts of exposures. So thanks for that comment, Al. And I'd also like to thank Samira, who suggested this very podcast that we're doing now, and I hope she gets a lot of use from it. In particular, she wanted to focus on portrait studios, so that's kind of what we're going to focus on today, but I guess we'll probably touch on other things as well. So let's get right into it now. So straight up, photography is about light. We can use the sun, we can use candles, or if we want a predictable setup, we can use a studio setup, and that's what we're going to talk about today. So I thought we would talk about three setups, actually. One setup would be using a kit with several heads that plug into a central unit, and then that unit plugs into the wall. I thought we would talk about just using those portable flashes. That's an excellent way to do studio as well, believe it or not. And then the third way is with monolights, and these lights either plug into the wall or they plug into battery packs. And I thought we'd talk about all three and focus on beginning setups for those three, meaning we're not going to be spending a lot of money. Especially for beginners, you really don't want to spend a lot of money because you don't know what you're getting into. You don't know what your passions are going to become. So it's kind of silly to spend a lot of money when you're just getting into stuff. That's always been my opinion. I'll be straight up with you. I haven't always followed it myself, but I've regretted it when I haven't followed it because there have been times where I've purchased equipment that was, you know, several hundred dollars more than I needed to. I never got the functionality from it, and I just kicked myself later on for wasting the money. So I'm not necessarily practicing what I'm preaching, but I'm giving you the benefit of my experience. So start off small, don't spend a lot of money. So straight up, people are going to ask continuous versus flash. And continuous is a light that's on continually, and flash gives you bursts of light. So in the three scenarios I described just before, those are all flash scenarios. Although you can use continuous lights for portraiture, I don't recommend it. And even though, you know, you can light someone with a household bulb, you know, or a floodlight or something like that, flash really is the way to go. For one, if you're shooting people, it gets too hot. The lights just get really, really hot. It also gets totally uncomfortable looking at such blinding light. In order to get any type of respectable aperture using continuous lights, those lights have to be bright. So for those two reasons, especially with portraiture, I definitely do not recommend using continuous lights. One advantage of using continuous lights is, of course, that you kind of get a better feel for what the final shot is going to look like. That's true. There's no disputing that. But especially these days with digital cameras, you see the result anyway. So that point no longer weighs as heavily as it used to before digital took over the world. Also, with at least two of the scenarios that we're going to talk about today, there's often a modeling light that comes with the units. So you can kind of get an idea of the lighting pattern even before you fire the flashes. So I thought we could also talk about some tools of the trade. So you're going to choose the flash setup that you want, which we'll get into individually shortly. And then you'll also probably need a couple of things depending on the scenario that you choose. One thing that is very, very handy is a flash meter. And a flash meter measures the intensity of the flash. So that's going to be a very useful thing to have. And you can often pick them up used on eBay or other photo stores. And that'll probably set you back, depending on the deal you get, $50 to $250 or $300, depending on the flash meter that you get and the deal that you get. But it's a very useful thing to have, so I do recommend it. There are some photographers these days that say you don't really need a flash meter. You could see it all through the camera anyway. You just set one flash head one stop above the other one, and you can just judge in camera. That's not my thing. I like to be a little more precise, so I definitely recommend using a flash meter. Another thing that you're going to need is you're going to need a way to fire the flashes, depending again on the system you use, and that's going to require maybe sync cords and maybe slaves or maybe remote triggers, and we're going to get into those as well as we talk about the individual setups. And then something else that you're going to need is you're going to need accessories to shape the light. So let's say the light is coming from a reflector. It doesn't matter if it's a kit or a monolight or even a flash. There are times where you want to focus the light more centrally. So you'll need something like a snoot to really focus it to a finer point. Or you'll need something like barn doors, which will close off part of the light. Or again, you may need something like a softbox to soften the light. You may want to bounce the flashes or the heads into an umbrella, which will soften the light as well. So in order to bounce them into an umbrella, you're also going to need a stand. So there is a little bit of investment with regard to accessories as well that you need to be aware of. With all three of the scenarios, you're going to need some type of stand to hold the head, either to fire the head directly or to fire the head into an umbrella. If it's into an umbrella, you're also going to need some type of adapter on the light stand, which will hold the umbrella. So keep that in mind. Luckily, you can find a lot of things used. You can get a lot of this stuff delivered right to your home. And a lot of this stuff is a lot cheaper than it was before digital came around. There's much more competition. The world is just more consumer friendly when it comes to their pricing. So a lot of stuff you're going to be able to pick up more inexpensively, but you will have to shell out a few coins, that's for sure. Before we actually get into the three types of lights that we're going to talk about today, I thought I would just talk about how I light things. So typically when I'm doing a portrait and a more formal portrait, which I guess is what we're going to be talking about now with multiple heads, I mean, once you set up the scenario, there's not loads of room for movement. If you're setting up two or three lights, then your subject is going to be positioned somewhere in order to receive those lights. So they're going to be pretty static. So this is more of a formal setup, but it's important to know how to do these things. So how I typically work is I set up my background light first, believe it or not. So I want to know what type of background I'm using. Am I lighting it? Am I lighting it with a circle spot? You see these a lot in older photography, let's say in the 1940s, there was always this beautiful round circle on the back of the backdrop. And it doesn't have to be a circle. It can be any type of light whatsoever. But very often you want to light the background. I don't always want to, but I often want to. And when I do, I always set up that light first. So that would be the first light I would set up, and then I would set up the main light. So the main light is going to create the main lighting pattern on the subject. So for a portrait, we're going to light a person, and we can light them straight on, we can light them from the side, we can light them from 45 degrees, we could light them from above 45 degrees. There's tons and tons of ways in which to light someone, and we're not going to get into lighting types today. Just to say that there's a main light, which causes the lighting pattern. And then typically we have a fill light. And that fill light will fill the shadows caused by the main light. So again, let's say we have someone looking at the camera and we have a main light and it's shining right on their face from the side. So it's parallel to their body and it's shining right on the side of their face. As you can imagine, the side of their face receiving light is going to be light. And since the other side of their face is not receiving any light, that side is going to be dark. Now, although I don't have to do this, chances are I will want to fill in those shadows somewhat. If I choose not to for a very dramatic portrait, I may not indeed. But most often when I'm shooting a formal portrait or even semi-formal portrait, I'm going to use some type of fill light. And depending on the strength of that fill light, that is going to help determine how light or dark that side of the face is. So let's say, for instance, this is a classic lighting position. So let's say you do want to use that side light. So you'll use the side light coming from one side, and then kind of in front of the camera or either to the right or the left of the camera, you will use a fill light. If the main light is a certain strength and the fill light is the same strength, that type of portrait is going to be less dramatic than if I have a different strength with regard to the main light and the fill light. Typically, the fill light is less strong than the main light. That's why it's called fill. And you can really control how dramatic the portrait is by adjusting the strength of that fill light. So again, if it's the same strength as the main light, it's going to be less dramatic. And if it's lower in light than the main light, it's going to be more dramatic, because the side of the face that's in shadow is going to get less and less light, so it'll appear darker.
And just to illustrate with a quick example, photographs that are darker are more dramatic. So picture like a 1940s photograph of a detective, you know, one light on him, a lot of the photograph is in shadow. That's a dramatic portrait, as compared with a fashion photograph where, you know, the model is beautifully lit, and there's very few shadows, everything is nice and bright. That's a less dramatic portrait. Obviously, fashion photography can be dramatic, and detective photography, you know, doesn't have to be dramatic, but, you know, just to illustrate the points, those are classic examples.
So I don't want to spend too much time talking about lighting ratios, because that's going to be material for another podcast, of course, but, you know, a simple lighting setup will be the main light having a certain value, and the fill light and the background light being one stop less than that. So whatever the main light is set at, let's say it's set at F8. So the background light might be set at F5.6, and the fill light might also be set at 5.6. And this is going to give us, in general, a very pleasing portrait. Like I said, we'll get into ratios and examples with ratios in a future podcast for sure. And before we actually get into lighting kits, which is the next topic, I should just say that, you know, you could add, of course, a fourth light and a fifth light, but you really want to start early. You want to be able to see the light, and you want to be able to see the differences between using one light and two lights and three lights before you get into four or five. So that's why really I suggest, you know, one for the background, one main one, and one to fill the shadows. Once you're comfortable with that, you can add a fourth light, which may very well be a hair light. Some people will use that light to emphasize the hair on a model, but you know, not always. They may not. They may use a reflector to bounce back some of the light from the main light, or even they can shine the background light. Some part of the light will hit the background and another part will hit the ceiling and bounce back into the hair. So again, lighting can get super, super technical. By no means am I even close to being a master of lighting or anything like this, but, you know, just from doing this a while, I do have some experience with it. So I would say start off with three lights first, if you can. If you can't afford three lights of any type, don't get what you can afford. But if you're able to get three lights to start, for me, that would be my suggestion. So now let's get into lighting kits a little bit. And I'm starting with lighting kits because I have one, and I've used one for eons. And I've used this for portraits, and I've used this for even for weddings and stuff like that. It's always been enough for me. And again, that's one of the great things about using kits of even moderate power, is they normally have enough oomph to light whatever you need them to light. You'll often see flash kits with numbers of 400, 800, 1600, and these are like based often on watt seconds, or they differ in exactly what they're measuring. But typically a kit from a given lighting company will come in three strengths, you know, beginner, intermediate, and advanced, and the advanced will be the most powerful one. And for most people, either the beginner one or the middle one will be more than enough, especially to start. So mine is a Novatron 600 VR. It's good. You know, I haven't used so many of them because I've just always used mine. Mine's always done the trick. I use them with umbrellas, and I also have a softbox with it. And it's just really versatile and easy to use. And there's no problem using it. What I do, my technique, is I have three heads. And like I said, I plug them into this main battery pack unit. And that battery pack unit plugs into the wall. And the cords are sufficiently long so that in a small to medium sized studio, you will have enough room. And basically, yeah, I set up, you know, the background light, like I mentioned. I set up the main light, which I typically bounce into an umbrella, and I set up the fill light, which I typically bounce into an umbrella as well. I would say it takes me about a half hour to 40 minutes to set up any setup, just to make sure that everything is balanced and nice and working well. And you just shoot from there. I measure all the lights individually, as I mentioned, and it works really well. Novatron is just one brand. Mine is like 15 years old. It worked well with my older non-digital cameras, and it works well with my Canon 30D. The advantage of using a system like this is that I find I have more than enough power for a medium-sized studio. If you have an enormous studio, you might want to go a little higher on the watt seconds. I know they have like a 1000 VR or 1000V. I'm not exactly sure of all their products. But yeah, well, if you have a large studio, you could definitely get a larger pack. You can pick these things up used on eBay. I remember I paid somewhere in the $400 range, and I got a super good deal. We're going back like 10 or 15 years, and you can find these things again for like $350 or $300 now because, you know, new models and new technology has come out. But my kit came with three heads, it came with two umbrellas, and it came with three stands, and it came with a carrying case. So you get all that for, you know, just several hundred dollars, you are good to go. All you need is some type of PC cord that goes from the main unit to your camera. And a PC cord is a cord that fires the flashes from your camera. So some cameras have these PC adapters, some don't. You can also put a hot shoe adapter that will also take a PC cord if your camera won't accept it directly. What you should be aware of also is if you're using a digital camera, some of these older systems may have not been designed for it. So I highly recommend that you contact the manufacturer or do some research on the net just to make sure that the unit won't fry your new camera. If you're using an older camera, no issue. Or chances are, no issue. You still want to double check. But with the digital cameras, sometimes the voltage is different, and the new digital cameras will take too much voltage from the older apparatuses, and you can fry your camera. So you need to be sure it's going to work. The advantage of a system like this, again, is it's portable. It's all in one. You can bring it anywhere you want. The heads are also adjustable. I can adjust some of those heads and just flick the switch to -1 or -2. Now, granted, it's not the world's most precise thing, -1 or -2. Some of the other systems have knobs where you can vary them in tenths of stops for much greater flexibility. But for my needs, this has always worked out well. For me, I typically want the fill light to be 1 or 2 less stops than the main light anyway, so it works really well. If I need it to be more than that, I could just pull the actual light further away from the subject, put some type of other diffusing material in front of the reflector. There are ways around everything. Another advantage is that it recycles quite quickly within a second or so. So I take one shot, I wait one more second, I'm ready to go. Take one shot, wait one more second, ready to go. And recycling time are going to vary with different setups that you use. But with this particular setup, it's pretty good. The more money you spend, the faster the flash will recycle. And, the more control you're going to have over the heads, you know, being able to turn them to 1/10 of a stop, as I just mentioned before. Some of the bad parts or some of the cons of using systems like this are they're heavy, man. That box weighs quite a bit and it's big and it's bulky. And another con may be that you have wires everywhere, and it's not always the most attractive thing. You know, there's no getting around the wires here. They're just in your face kind of thing. So if you hide them or, you know, put tape on them or just place them nicely, there's no issue. You know, people are used to seeing wires. Models are used to seeing wires. But some of the other setups have no wires, and there's something sweet about having no wires. So you just need to be aware of that, that there's going to be wires everywhere with these systems that are connected to a central battery pack-like thing and then plugged into a wall as well. Obviously, one more con real quick is you need electricity. No electricity, no shooting. Before I forget, the one other small disadvantage might be that if you're going to light a large room, you know, this is typically for, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 person portraits, maybe a little larger. But if you wanted to use this to light a room, let's say it's a huge gym and you want to put these things in the corners, in the background of the room so that you can capture dancing during an event, these may not be the best for that because, you know, the length of the cord is fixed. I guess you could start buying, you know, extension cords and things like that. But for that type of setup, not the best. This type of setup works excellent for, you know, smaller grouped portraits, even up to like, whatever, 10 or 20 people. If it's in a certain fixed area, you're good. And I've used it like in that capacity for many, many years. And I've been totally satisfied. It's never broken on me once. It's been great for me. Other people may recommend higher end models, Speedtron, Bowens, Elinchrom. Norman is also a very popular brand. These are all great. I've never really needed them. So I've always been happy with my Novatron. And it's always done the trick for me.
Yeah, so that's my input on those kit systems. They're not actually called a kit systems. I think they're like a pack and head system. I think that's the more official name for these. They look like battery packs. And all the heads are connected by wires. And they all plug into that battery pack looking thing. So the second type of lighting that I want to talk about today is monoblock lighting. And these are really, really versatile because basically these are heads, but they're not attached to the battery pack,
which then needs to be plugged into the wall.
You just plug them directly into the wall, or sometimes you can even hook them up to battery packs for extreme portability.
And those type of battery packs, unlike the pack and head systems, do not have to be plugged into the wall, so you can use them inside, outside, upside down. It's all good.
Now, there's a lot of advantages there. For one, you just don't have these cables running all over the place, which is a great, great feature. And again, they're more versatile. You could place them, you know, in the backs of rooms, let's say, just to light up a large room to give, you know, some backlighting during any type of event. And it really, really helps. You know, I've used these many, many times during weddings whereby, you know, you want to shoot the bride and groom and typically you'll have on-camera flash to shoot the bride and groom. But if it's a large room, you don't want the rest of the hall to appear dark. So using these monoblock lights, you can bounce them into the ceiling, and that'll give you some good ambient light as a background, so it won't appear all dark. And of course, you know, you could also just set up any lighting situation with these monoblocks as well. Have one as the main light, one as the fill light, and then another as the background light, another as the hair light. You can use as many as you can. Now, what you have to realize is that these lights need to sync with each other, and very often people will use slaves. And what a slave is, and what a slave is in photography anyway, what a slave is, it's a piece of equipment or apparatus that fires different flash heads. And you can use slaves on, you know, those portable little flashes that you buy and mount on your camera. You can use slaves with monolights as well. Now, some monolights actually have slaves built in, and those are really, really good. But if they don't have a slave built in, you will need to attach some type of slave to them so that they all fire in sync. Now, I don't want to get too much into slaves because there's different qualities and different sizes and etc., but safe to say that you could get a little peanut slave, which is a teeny, teeny, teeny little slave that will attach to most monoblocks. And they're like 20 or 30 bucks. So we're not talking about a huge expense there. So, you know, if your monoblock doesn't have one, again, you just attach it through normally like a PC cord or some type of wire. You just attach this little slave. And when one flash fires, it catches the light of that flash and fires it at the same time or like a millionth of a second, later.
okay, not a millionth, but you get the point, such that they all fire asynchronously and create the lighting scenario for your subject. Another advantage of these monolights is the precision. A lot of times these are going to be more precise than those pack and head system kits that I spoke about earlier. You can often control the intensity of the light with greater precision. So that's yet another small advantage. You could dial it up by eighths of stops or tenths of stops, etc. Whereas often with the kits, you get less of a choice. You know, most often you're going to be okay with either system in terms of precisely controlling the flash, especially if you're a beginner. But they do seem to offer a little more precision in terms of dialing up or dialing down the strength of the light. They also do seem to be a little lighter overall than the pack and head system. But again, you know, every system is going to weigh differently. The heads themselves on the monolights are going to be heavier than the heads themselves on the pack and head system because you have everything built into one, whereas a lot of the weight on the pack and head system is, you know, going into the pack itself. So, you know, weight may be a little bit less heavy, but they're still going to weigh. And especially if you include stands and stuff like that, you know, they're not totally light. Now, personally, if I had to make the choice again, I gotta be honest and say that I probably would not have bought my Novatron system. I bought it a long time ago. It just came to me at a really good deal, and I bought them, and I've been using them for years and years. But if I had to spend that, I don't remember what it was, like $350 or $400 now, which was still a good deal back then and still a great deal now, I think I'd probably invest it in monolights just because, for me, they seem to be more versatile. And the lack of wires is the less amount of wires is very, very, very intriguing for me. I mean, you still have wires in that they plug into the wall, but the wires themselves are not running all over the floor. Typically, you know, they're located closer to the wall, so it makes a clearer path for people to walk. And like I mentioned earlier, a lot of these monolights, you can also attach them to some type of battery pack. So if you really want to go ultra portable outside, you're able to. On the pack and head systems, of course, you can do the same thing, but you'd probably need some type of generator, you know, to fuel the pack with energy. So yeah, if I had to choose again, I think I'd probably go with monolights. Now, in terms of brands, I've used a few different brands, including Photogenix, which are a really good brand. But these days, a certain brand that is getting a lot of buzz is Alien Bees. And I'm going to put the link in the show notes, but alienbees.com. They make some great, great lights. And I got to say, I haven't used them in particular, but I know people who have, and I've contacted them just so that I'm not speaking out of my butt here. I have done some research on these lights, and they seem to be really, really good. And they're like $280 brand new for a medium-sized light. So, you know, typically they have the lower-end lights and the higher-end lights, and there's a medium light. And there's one called the Alien Bees B800, and that seems to be one of their middle lights in terms of intensity, which for me is going to be good enough for any portrait situation. Typically, if you're bouncing into an umbrella, depending on how far the light is from your subject, you're going to be getting anywhere from f11 to f16. And, you know, if you're using a straight up reflector, you know, you're going to be at f20 to f32. So these are great apertures for portraiture in particular. And I'd have no trouble buying one of these. They also offer some type of 2-year guarantee. Now, a good thing about these things is they come in like 5 colors if you're fashion conscious, but they also have built-in slaves, which is amazing. So you don't have to buy these peanut slave or, you know, a different type of slaves to trigger them. So you just need to get a cord that goes from the from one of the flashes into your camera, and then when you click the shutter, it'll flash the other ones. As a very quick aside, there are slaves that are completely wireless, and they're amazing, and I highly recommend them after you've done some preliminary research and buying and testing out with lights, because they're not essential, especially at the beginning. But you can trigger slaves wirelessly, and it's extremely useful. So one brand in particular that people rave about that I've used is the Pocket Wizard. Nobody talks badly about them. They're quite expensive, actually. So they talk badly about them in terms of price, maybe, but they're really, really, really effective. So let's say you have, you know, three monolites, and let's say they didn't have slaves in them, and you wanted to fire them without having one wire go from the monoblock into your camera, because you need to fire them somehow. You could use, like, you know, the transceiver of the Pocket Wizard. You know, you could have a transmitter or a receiver, or the latest models are transceivers. They do both. And basically, one little piece of apparatus goes on your camera, one little piece of apparatus goes into one of the flash heads, and then when you press the shutter of your camera, all the flash heads fire together. They receive the signal from the piece of apparatus attached to your camera. Really, really, really useful. Back to the alien bees. They're not paying me anything to endorse them, but the research that I'm doing is so positive that I dare say if I had $500 or $600 right now, I'd be buying those lights if I didn't already have my Novatron system. I personally don't go buying things that I don't need just because they're cool. You know, as long as the Novatron system is going to continue to fulfill my needs, I'm going to use it and then borrow or rent other monolights as I've done in the past as needed. But if you're just starting out and you have nothing, I dare say those monolights are way more convenient, or considerably more convenient, than the pack and head systems. So that's where I would go, and I'd probably try these alien bees because they're really not that expensive. Now, the third type of lighting today are those portable flashes that you put on top of your camera. And believe it or not, these can really be used well for portrait lighting. Straight up, depending on the size of your studio, they may not be strong enough, but very often they will be more than strong enough. And I dare say for the average budding photographer who's just learning about lighting now, they will definitely be more than strong enough. And they're a great way to learn, and they're very inexpensive. So a lot of these modern ones that people are buying now for like $400 and $500, you'll put them on your higher end digital cameras, and they'll tilt and they'll bounce different directions, and they have slaves built in, and they're really, really user friendly. So, I mean, if you have one of these things, especially if it has a slave built in, even if you've changed camera brands, which a lot of people have done, which I have done, I used to be a diehard Nikon dude, and for digital, I have switched to Canon. Maybe one of these days I'll switch back, but for the time being, I've switched to Canon. So I have these older Nikon flashes that are really good. I paid like $400 or $500 for them when I needed them, and now they've just been in my bag. I haven't really sold them. Maybe I should have, but I haven't. But because they are higher-end flashes, they have these slaves built in. So I now have one for my Canon digital camera, and then I have two of these Nikon flashes. So I have three flashes. So again, why not use one to light the main subject? Why not use one to fill in the shadows? And why not use the third to light the background? And then you could use a fourth or a fifth, etc. There is a great website that I've discovered recently. I discovered it a while ago, but I didn't really investigate it until recently. And it's called strobist.com. And this guy is great. I mean, he created this whole site just on lighting with portable flashes. Take a look through that site. It's really, really good. I mean, this guy really spends all his time developing all the information on that site, and it's so well done. And he talks about clamps that you can use, you know, to fasten those flashes anywhere, and, you know, adapters to put them on light stands. It's a really well thought out concept and well thought out website, actually. So basically how it works is, again, if they don't have slaves on them, you need a way so that they all fire together. So again, with a little peanut slave, you know, most of these higher end flashes, you can, you know, just with a little PC cord, you can just attach a little slave for about $20 or $30. And as long as they're in the line of sight of the other flashes, and there's tricks to extend the line of sight also, but as long as they're in the line of the other flashes, when one fires, they'll all fire. So the trick is, you know, how to get one of the flashes attached to your camera. And again, you're going to do this through a wire that's going to attach to one of the flashes, and then you have the other two flashes on a slave. Or you can use something like a Pocket Wizard, again, which is going to trigger all the flashes
wirelessly.
Now, of course, one of the advantages of this system is the portability and lack of weight. I mean, these things don't weigh a lot. And the light that they put out, it's daylight balanced, and it's amazing. It's good for, you know, conventional photography, for digital photography, and you can really, like, go really far with just portable flashes. Now, I may have scared people off with the, you know, $400 to $500 mark for, you know, dedicated flashes to your camera. But, you know, back when I was studying this, way back when dinosaurs roamed the earth, one of the really popular flashes was a Vivitar 285. And believe it or not, that flash can still be used today. And what was good about that flash was it put out a lot of power, and you were able to control the intensity of that power very easily. So if anyone has old flashes lying around, you know, you can use these for lighting. You know, you don't need to buy expensive lights. Now, these suckers you could pick up really, really cheap, maybe under $100. But lo and behold, Vivitar has even released new flashes for digital cameras that are, I think, in the $100 range or $89, brand new. So you could pick up three of these Vivitar flashes for like $300, brand spanking new, and, you know, have a field day with lighting. Just learn. One caveat right away before I forget about it is with the older flashes, you want to be sure, you want to be absolutely sure, you want to be 1,000,000% certain that it'll work with your newer camera, and very often it won't. So if you're putting one of those old flashes into your camera, if you're syncing it with your camera, you can fry it. So you need to be damn sure that you're not going to fry your new camera with a cheap flash. So the newer flashes by Vivitar, the 285s,
it's the 285HV,
and those will work with most cameras. You want to be absolutely sure before you do it, but they will work with most of them. The older 285s and older cameras in general, if you're attaching it via a PC cord, which is the cord that syncs cameras to flashes, it does other things too, but one of the things it does is it syncs cameras to flashes, you want to be really, really, really sure that it's not going to fry your new camera. So older flashes, be sure. Now, if you're using it as, you know, just a light that's going to fire through a slave, it doesn't matter. So let's say, you know, I have a newer flash that I know is safe, and that's attached to my camera. Obviously, if the 285, let's say the old 285, is attached to a peanut slave, so that when it sees the light from another flash, it fires, you have no issue. We're only talking about the flash that's actually attached to the camera via a PC cord or another cord.
And besides the 285, if you do a little bit of research, you'll find other brands that are very interesting. Sunpac has a brand called the 383. That's also a really interesting one. And one of the advantages there is that you could swivel the head and tilt the head, whereas the 285HVs, you can only tilt the head.
So again, these flashes are like, they're really good. You can bounce them, you know, you can bounce them off the white card. You know, you can diffuse them through accessories that you'll find in most photo stores. You can bounce them into umbrellas. You can do tons and tons of stuff with them. You can get creative. You can make a funnel out of black construction paper or cardboard. And that way you can have like a snoot on it. You can get really creative and create fantastic images just using three or four flash heads. Three or four of the portable, you know, flash heads like the Vivitars or Canons or Nikons or any of the ones that fit on camera but can also be used off camera. And, you know, I think that's going to do it for today. This was the longest podcast I've done so far, and I may have covered a bit too much. I hope not, but I may have covered a bit much for one podcast. But I did want to give Samira in particular at least three options with regard to, you know, what choice she should use. You know, everyone has different choices. Everyone has different opinions. I mean, I didn't really even talk about tungsten lighting or halogen lighting. Those are continuous sources of light that can also be used, you know, especially for product photography. Sometimes you want a continuous light source because it doesn't matter how hot, you know, it gets in the studio. You know, if the product isn't chocolate, it's not gonna melt your product. So sometimes it's nice just to have a continuous light source. But for portraits, really, you know, it's been my experience that flash just works better. It's less bothersome to the subject, and you have enough of it to take, you know, the aperture of your choice when you want to shoot. So those were my recommendations for today. Of course, I'd love to get comments, especially about stuff that I may have missed that I could possibly include in a different podcast. Also, I'm speaking really quickly too. If I made any type of error, please don't be shy. Please send me an email to correct me, photography.ca@gmail.com. you know, post directly into the blog, www.photography.ca/blog, you know, just find your way to this week's podcast and just post in it, you know, and I'll correct any error that I've made. I'm definitely not infallible. And, you know, sometimes even after I edit this sucker, there might be something that I've forgot. So please leave comments. So thanks very much for listening, everyone. We should be back in about 10 days or 2 weeks or so. I'm going to try more on the 10-day end. And as always, keep on shooting. Bye for now.